All right, happy Tuesday. It is the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt, fresh off a Victoria Day weekend. Did you celebrate the birth of Queen Victoria yesterday?
I did. By listening to other people's explosives deep into the night. I used to like that. I used to like setting off a little pyromania thing. I used to like setting stuff off.
Children love it.
It's good for kids, but they don't allow them
no. kind of
explosives that we used to get. Like, honest to God, explosives.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember as a kid, I liked the thing called the burning schoolhouse, right? Where the stuff starts coming out the top of it.
Yeah, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a question about fireworks etiquette. Because,
okay.
I didn't purchase my own fireworks. I was kind of like I was a fireworks mooch this year. I've bought fireworks in the past, right? I've spent a couple $100, go to that trailer that shows up.
It gets you, 12 minutes?
That's right.
It's not cheap.
No, it's not. But this year I said, nuts to that. I don't want to be the only guy paying for fireworks. So I saw some going off in the neighborhood. And we took a walk down the street and just, you know, partook.
Look, kids.
Didn't get too close, though, as, you know, so I didn't feel too guilty. So
we're just out for a walk in the dark. Yeah, we just happened to be
here. Is that fine? Is that an acceptable practice?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Too cheap?
A little, well, but you wouldn't want to just walk up to a stranger and hand him a 20, right, to watch his fireworks. Like, that'd be, like, if you got together as a neighborhood and you opted out, that would be the worst.
Yes, and then you still show up.
Yeah, look through your windows, pull the curtains aside. Look, kids. But I think, strangers. I think strangers' fireworks are fair game.
All right.
Yeah, so I think that's okay.
Well, I don't apologize. So, yeah.
No apologies. You said that. No apologies.
All right. Today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history. Stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles. What's going on with the Toronto Blue Jays? Yeah, the numbers are staggering. They've scored three or fewer runs in seven of their last eight. They're averaging the fourth fewest runs per game in the American League. And they're back to dead last amongst all Major League Baseball teams in batting average with runners in scoring position. 179. They dropped game one of this little mini two-game set against the St. Louis Cardinals. I guess, I mean, the headliner was the Paul Goldschmidt walk-off grand slam. We'll talk about the bullpen usage in that game, but the real reason they lost is because they can't buy a hit with runners in scoring position. 0-10 after a 1-10 performance on Sunday.
It's painful. It's painful to watch, and it's painful because there's no easy explanation where you say, well, if they did this, or they played this guy instead of this guy, it'll all get fixed. There's no explanation. There really is. You can look at the individual guys and say what they're not doing, and people who are better equipped to kind of break down guys physically in terms of what they're doing or watching can take a look at Vladdy or take a look at Teoscar Hernandez or take a look at several other guys and say, well, this is what they should be doing. This is what they're not doing. But fixing that, I would have bet the house that you wouldn't have had a complete offensive outage on this team. There were things that could have gone wrong, and we would have talked about pitching. We would have talked about injuries. We would have talked about the usual range of stuff, bullpen issues. But a complete power outage from a guy who was a runner-up to MVP, could have been the MVP last year, would have been in any other season other than the Shohei Ohtani, and a guy who's a Silver Slugger.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they're not. This isn't. They're not fluky guys. They're two of the best offensive players. I'm just singling them out because they're just lost right now. Like absolutely lost. But for them to just disappear offensively, and then the dominoes start to fall around them. So look, George Springer's been pretty good. I think Bo Bichette has had at least a few moments where he looked like Bo Bichette. He's still not there, but he had a few moments. Can't argue about Sandy Gaspinall, who now they're the number two hitter for the Toronto Blue Jays.
With a bullet.
Matt Chapman, I think, has had bad luck a little bit. And some of the other guys are what they are, right? I think Kirk is barreled up some balls, and I think Danny Jansen coming back will be fine. But those aren't the guys. Like, you got two guys here who should carry this team, could carry this team. Yep. Like, I'm omitting Gurriel just because...
Well, he's so streaky. Well, and he's kind of, at the moment, a part-time player. Not in the lineup again today.
You can't really play him right now because he's just flailing away. But the other two guys, by themselves, should be able to carry this team offensively two nights out of five.
Yes.
And they are, right now, incredible liabilities. And I don't know how this, and I do not know how, and I do not know why, and neither does Charlie Montoyo, and neither does Ross Atkins, and neither do the myriad hitting coaches or the hitting strategists or the hitting whatevers. What do you do? I went to the game on
Sunday.
Yes. So I was going to go to the Bisons game. I was going to be very clever, go see the Bisons. I bought tickets, and then the weather looked kind of crappy. And I thought, well, it's an outdoor stadium. I've been there down there for a rain delay. It's no fun. I'll just go to the indoor stadium and watch the game. So I went, bought tickets for the Jays game, and then they opened the roof immediately. It was really cold. but that wasn't the worst of it. And they did cancel the Bisons game. So I felt very clever. And you know, then Kikuchi comes out and he's awful in the first inning, but they get through it. They only give up two. And then they come back and they scrape and it's 2-2. And you know, any other time that game against the Reds, you would have said, well, with this offense, let's just play this out here. You know, you're back to 2-2. You survived. Kikuchi gets himself straightened out. He gives you enough innings. Then you're going to score a couple. But you watching them right now, you said, no, they're not going to score a couple. They're just going to flail around here.
Yeah, they did. They went 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position that game and then followed that up, like I said, with an 0-for-10 yesterday.
Oh, it's awful. And it's awful to watch. It is so awful to watch right now. And I do think this will pass because just logically it will pass, Ben. But there's nothing worse than, you know, the bases loaded or, you know, runners in scoring position. You're sitting there saying, man, a double here breaks this game wide open. But you don't feel it coming. You feel the opposite. And I think they all feel the opposite.
Oh, they must. I mean, yeah, they're bearing witness to what's happening. So I have two thoughts here on the macro and the micro.
Okay, go ahead.
On the macro point, again, like I keep screaming this into a microphone, but it will eventually bear some semblance to reality that the runners in scoring position thing, mathematically, this will, I'm not saying they're going to be the best team in baseball. I think they were second in all of baseball in batting average with runners in scoring position a season ago. I'm not saying there's a long way to go for that to happen because they're dead last more than a month into the season. They're hitting about 250. They're not going to hit 190 with runners in scoring position. You know, it kind of resembles, it feels, and people forget it because the end of the season last year was so good, but there were big time conversations about the offense in August last year.
Yes, there were.
People said this team was dead and buried because they were brutal in August. Mm-hmm. I dug up the numbers. In August last season, the Blue Jays hit 221 with runners in scoring position, and they went 16-14, and they averaged actually fewer runs per game, 2.6 runs per game. In August, it was as painful to watch as this, maybe more, because it felt like more was on the line. Well, more was on the line at that point. You could see the postseason spot seemingly slipping through their fingers. And then what happened? The calendar flipped, and they hit 281 with runners in scoring position in September, went 22-9, September and October, really. They played three games in October. 22-9, they averaged 4.13 runs per game. So it can happen. It will happen.
And that's baseball, right? That is, there's a lot of baseball in what you just said.
Yes. So that will happen. It's not going to be this bad all season long. But to the micro, Chris Black, producer of Blue Jay Central, really had my brain swimming today.
He's good at that. He's really good at that.
Because Vlad, right? Vlad. He was the best hitter in the American League a season ago. And I think many a Blue Jays fan has offered the piece of suggestion, advice to Vlad and the rest of these Blue Jays hitters. Well, how about you spray the ball around a little bit more? How about you don't think about pulling the ball in every opportunity? Well, guess what? I mean, if Chris Black's numbers are to be trusted. I believe they are because they're vetted multiple times and then they show up on your television screen. Pull percentage, year-to-year change. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has the highest negative change when it comes to... So he's hitting the ball the opposite way 8.4% more than he did a season ago. Teoscar Hernandez, minus 5.3% pull percentage, year-to-year change. George Springer, minus 4.4%. The only guys that are on the positive side of the ledger... Bobichet plus 2.8. So he's pulling the ball 2.8% more. And Santiago Espinal plus 7% more. Now here is, I don't want to take his whole take, but it's very good.
Yes.
His take is that perhaps some players with those very hitter-friendly ballparks early on in the season got very comfortable with those fly balls to right field that would either bang off the wall or go over the wall in Dunedin and Buffalo, and perhaps in most major league ballparks, especially early in the season, would not do that. Perhaps instead of thinking about your offensive approach being a gap to gap, put the ball in play the other way, they should really lean into what they are, which is a pull first, home run happy offense, looking to just light into some baseballs and hit it into the fifth deck in left field. That's one man's opinion on the matter.
Well, it wouldn't be worse.
It wouldn't be worse. That's a check mark in the, that checks out, is that it could not be worse.
I would rather watch Vladdy now try and sell out to hit a ball over the roof to left field than roll over and hit another ground ball at somebody, which is kind of what it's been like. He's probably right. You know, well, I'm not sure it would. This is where it kind of gets down. It's not science, and kind of it's alchemy or something.
Yeah.
When it gets right, it just gets right. Yeah. Right. And you can see hitters sometimes, you say, and guys talk about it who analyze games and say, you can see him starting to come out of it. He's having better at bats. You know, even if that was an out, it's a better out.
Yep.
Seeing the ball better, making better contact.
That with Matt Chapman.
I think so. Although, my God, like, I think the dead ball here is not doing him any favors, right?
No.
But I'm not seeing it with Vladdy.
No. Well, so here are the numbers with Vlad. In May, he's hitting .225, and the on base is actually half decent, .345.
Well, remember, for like about half of May, he had a quote-unquote hitting streak.
He has three extra base hits, still holding strong on three extra base hits, the lowest period of slugging in his entire career. He's slugging .296 in the month of May. And I don't want to go two numbers. I feel like I've thrown too many numbers out here, but I'm trying to figure this out, right? Because this doesn't make sense. This is a guy who we saw finally become the guy we expected to see last season. And I mentioned the bandbox ballparks they played in early in the season. They didn't play the whole season there, and they played half the games away from those ballparks, too, and he was still good.
Yeah, it's not. He wasn't a Dunedin Stadium, whatever that's called down there, Salem Field phenomenon. No, he hit everywhere.
But the launch angle, we're back to ground ball city. It's worse than it was when he broke into the major leagues, and we talked about, boy, if he's killing the ball, if he just figured out a way to put it in the air, it's worse than that, Steven. So, okay, the greats, like the Mike Trouts and the Albert Pujolses, once they figured it out, they never look back, right? Mm-hmm. Until Pujols started becoming this version of himself. And Mike Trout, as long as he's in the lineup, he's Mike Trout, right? He had a tough go his first year in the major leagues, got sent back down. But first year that he actually had the reins taken off of him and had a season of 1,000 OPS, he never wavered with a really, really average to below average offensive season. But maybe we're looking at some sort of adjustment period for Vlad. Is it possible that things went so well for him a season ago that maybe we put the cart ahead of the horse a little bit with him?
It's a tricky, like, I try and resist that idea. It's kind of like remember the home run derby thing, and they say, well, that messed him up. You know, he went in and home run derby and everybody went nuts. Or the crazy night early this year in Yankee Stadium, you say, well, he hasn't been the same since then. He kind of hasn't been the same since then. He really hasn't. And I just think that somebody like him who has, who's 80% of his brain, I think, is baseball. I'm not sure, like, since the time he was a child, this is it, right? He's been, I do think he's a very advanced hitter and an advanced kind of baseball player that you could be just kind of lose it like you would if you were a little league kid hitting your first home run and then just swinging at everything after that, like I did when I got glasses. That's exactly what happened. Hit a home run immediately, got glasses. Then I said, yeah, this is easy. And then just, struck out 9 times in a row. I don't think he's that, right? No. So I don't think it's like he got excited or he got kind of, but there's, I don't have a better explanation.
No.
I don't have a better explanation. It's, well, look, at least the one thing people can't say here is, they should have kept Marcus Semien. Because that's the same. It's the same thing. Like, what's the explanation for Marcus Semien?
No, and it is. Oh, man. I know this is a trope, and it's nails on a chalkboard to people. But, yeah, it is early. That is just a fact. Okay.
It is. Yes.
We're at the quarter mark of the season.
They got 110 odd games to play. That's still a ways to go.
Yes. And they're, man, I just rattled off all those offensive stats. They're still in a playoff spot. They're above 500. I mean, how many teams could survive being dead last with runners in scoring position, being the fourth worst offense in the American League, and still being in a playoff spot?
A team with great starting pitching and a B-plus bullpen, which is what they are.
Exactly what they've proven to be. I think the theory that gives me most heart, like if I was going to say, I choose that to be the theory when it comes to Vlad Jr., is that he's such a team-first guy, and he sees the guys around him struggling, and he sees Teoscar come back off the IL and not be himself, and understanding his import to this offense, that he's just trying to do too much.
I think so. I think, you know, again, you don't want to, I'm not trying to read body language or, you know, what the guys look like when they have a bad at bat, but it would figure. He's the guy. Mm-hmm. He has carried this team. So he and Teoscar have carried this team at times, and they expect to, and they can look at the scoreboard. They know what's going on, and they know the situations, and they know what that, you know, one hit or two big hits and a certain, how that could just. And I do think the dam's going to break here at a certain point with him. It has to.
Mathematically.
Yeah. Now maybe something else will go haywire because that's also baseball.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, the idea that they're pressing, and you can't coach guys out of this. I don't. Maybe I kind of wish Donnie Bichette was around sometimes because he always makes sense to me when I listen to him. He really does. And I like him a lot. And I love it when he talks hitting. He's just an amazing guy to talk to and just a cool guy.
And I remember talking to him in August last year, what's going on with the runners in scoring position thing. Like, and then, you know, he was having these conversations about guys getting to this point in the season for the first time in their careers, playing this long into the season and yada, yada, yada. And he was still with that team for the September turnaround.
Well, he was. And the reason he's not with them now is because of the lockout and the fact that he couldn't, in theory, if he was a staff member with the Toronto Blue Jays, you'd talk hitting with his son, who was a player with the Toronto Blue Jays.
They can't rehire him, though?
Yes, they could. I don't know, unless there's some something else going on there. I don't know. But how many hitting coaches you want, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot. And I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to coach these guys out of it.
No, I don't think so. I think the professional hitters who have a proven track record are going to get back to hitting professionally and get closer to what their track record suggests they're going to do. But to that point, I mean, I mentioned the bullpen decisions yesterday.
Yeah.
Blue Jays is still in a playoff spot, but this is a team that came into the season with World Series expectations, and rightly so. And still do.
And they still do.
And they still do. And
because the starting pitching is still really, really good.
Yeah, and the guy going tonight might win the American League Cy Young Award in Kevin
Gausman.
Unless
one of their other guys wins it.
Yeah.
Unless Manoa wins it.
And you know what? Jose Berríos looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah. No, that is significant.
Yeah.
That you have, you know, right now, five starters who you can roll out and feel pretty good about.
Yes. But it should be noted that the pressure, like the you need somebody to blame if you're a fan. And I'm not saying that this doesn't, a direct impact on the people actually making the decisions. But yeah, you're only a couple of games over 500. This has been a disappointing start to the season after it started off without a series loss in like the first month. But I think some questions are now starting to be lobbed at Charlie Montoyo. And yesterday was one of the rare occurrences where I can actually point at some managerial decisions that I didn't necessarily agree with. But yeah, I think that the spotlight is starting to focus. I mean, it's obviously on the players for not performing and specifically Vlad Jr. But yeah, the manager is, this is what happens when you underperform. The manager is the guy that people put the target on.
You don't want Ryan Borucki pitching to Paul Goldschmidt in a leverage situation in extra innings. You don't want to manage
managing
a game.
101. That's what they teach you on the first
day. You
don't
want to manage your way into that situation ever, unless it's the 17th inning.
That's right.
And there's no one else. And you know, otherwise, Alejandro Kirk's going to pitch, right?
Right.
So yeah, you never want to manage yourself into that situation, and don't not using the closer, holding back the closer for to close to get the save in an extra inning game with in the current setup with the ghost runner on second, et cetera. It never made sense. It definitely doesn't make sense. You know, look at the meat of the order. Look where you are. Look at the leverage. If Romano's ready to go, use him. and worry about what happens after. Because you know what? The way your team's going, you're not going to score a run ever anyway. And in fact, this game is going to get lost by Ryan Borucki in the 14th inning or something, right? But at least give yourself as much runway as you possibly can. And I thought, yeah, Charlie managed himself into a corner on that one last night. And that, he made a mistake. He just did. You run Romano out there in that through that part of the order, try and get through that inning, and then hope like hell you'll finally scratch out a run. And I know it felt like the game was over when the Bichette opposite field, when the guy made that really nice play on the shot to right field, right?
Oh, Cardinals played great defense yesterday.
Yeah, so if that ball falls, they score two runs, maybe they probably do hold on to win because you bring in Jordan Romano. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just thought that's in 21st century baseball, that is baseball 101. You do not hold on to your closer in that situation on the road. You use him in the highest leverage situation with the game on the line, because otherwise you're going to end up with just what just happened, which is one of your sixth best reliever gave up the game losing hit while your other guy didn't pitch at all. So that's bad. But the getting there, you know, they got away with using Merriweather barely. But
by
about a foot, although Gurriel could have made that catch too, by the way.
That's also true.
They got away with that. They got away with using Phelps. They didn't. It's sort of like, it's like the Votto home run off Jimmy Garcia on Sunday that I also saw. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see our homeboy hit that shot. It's nice for him. Nice in the stadium too. But it felt in that game that it didn't matter how long it went on. Somebody was going to do that off some relief pitcher, and you're going to lose by one run because you couldn't score any runs.
That's right.
So, yeah, Jimmy Garcia, it wasn't even a bad pitch. But, you know, I'm not going to blame him for having Jimmy Garcia pitch to Joey Votto in that situation, because that's kind of what you're left with.
No, you got
to
score more than two runs against the team with the ERA of 6.
That's it. That's the point. And that is the point all through this, that you just got to get a little bit of breathing room from your offense. And then every little pitching decision and bullpen decision is going to feel like the seventh game of the World Series. So yeah, Charlie screwed up last night. Mm-hmm. I think that's just true. But, you know, by and large, I think he's done an okay job managing his way through with only high leverage situations. There are no low leverage situations.
I agree with you. And it's too early for this conversation, but this is, having the fire the manager conversation, that's a thing that happens in all sports. And just because Charlie's a nice guy doesn't mean he's immune from that conversation if this continues into June or, God forbid, beyond, right?
No, it's what happens to sports.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And it's about performance overall and team performance. And you can't get rid of enough guys or change enough guys in a situation when you come in with high expectations in any sport and the team underperforms. You know, it's like a hockey team. If it underperforms because it has mediocre goaltending, I guess you keep trying to find somebody who can play. But at a certain point, you and not that changing coaches is going to fix your goaltending, but that's what they do.
That's right.
Say, we're going to try something different here. And this is a team that went into the season with legitimate high expectations and has enjoyed, again, spectacular starting pitching. I think that's the word. And I don't think, you know, with last night being one of the exceptions, I don't think by and large you can go and say, you know, but for a bad managerial decision, they would have won the game. And even last night, even with a good managerial decision, I kind of think they would have lost the game.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have gone 0-for-20 with runners in scoring position easily.
It might still be going on.
Right.
But it kind of felt like they were, yeah. So, but that doesn't mean. Well, it certainly doesn't mean that fans won't feel that way, because that's what fans, you know, everybody's antsy here right now, and I get it. I felt antsy sitting there watching the game on Sunday. I thought, this is torture. How long is this game going to go on? Are you ever going to score? Just do something. And that's what you get. It kind of comes down to do something. Now, I don't think this is a knee-jerk front office or a knee-jerk ownership where they're going to just be reactive and say, try something new without more than where... than what we've seen so far. And I don't think this is a situation where you have, they're not hitting. It's a double negative, I know, but they are not hitting because they're mad at the manager.
Yeah.
Or they've lost, they're not listening to the manager or any of those things that occasionally happen in baseball where teams, or any sport where teams disconnect from the coach or the manager. It happens. But that, that's a bad explanation for this, if that's what you're trying to. I don't know that anybody's going to connect those dots.
No, I don't think they should. But it, yeah, should be noted that, yeah, no, I mean, this is not a guy that's on, like, a lifetime deal. Like, I think he's under contract for next season as well, but that's it.
And that's just, you know, that's if they decided to make a change, that none of that stuff would be, his contract status would be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. That was today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. Quickly, before we take a break and talk to John Morosi, I do want to get one more topic in here.
Yes.
Keep it local. As Mark Giordano does the Jason Spezza.
Yes.
Except he's actually somebody of greater import.
Well, aside from speech making.
Yeah.
Don't forget that.
Yes. And what a speech was made. They still lost the series. But Mark Giordano signs a 2-year deal with an annual average value of under $1 million, $800,000. This is a guy that, I mean, every number and every analyst and anybody that, you know, just use the eye test or the nut, whatever you use, is a top 4 defenseman in the National Hockey League, even at an advanced age. And he said, sign me up, I'm coming back. So there's two ways to view this, Steven.
Yes.
One is, that's it, what an incredible coup. What a great thing that this franchise can do, had never been able to do before. Kyle Dubas, hometown guy, takes a discount, stays here.
Yes.
There is another way to view this.
And Ed, what is that?
Everyone's very comfortable on this team, and he's here, and he's taking that deal to live with his family in the city of Toronto and be comfortable. Which
so he's
is,
in his lazy boy with his feet up right now, his hands behind his head, kind of has training camps. You think that's what it is?
I want everybody to be comfortable at all times, but I don't know. Is that, there is potentially something to that, you know, I know they all want to win hockey games, but the reality is, if they don't win the Stanley Cup, it's not the worst thing in the world. They get to go sleep in their own beds at night. I know maybe that's oversimplifying it, but there's an element of that. Okay,
yeah.
And maybe it's only like less than 1%.
But he just came from playing. He played for an expansion team last year, right? Which is the best gig. Until Vegas kind of changed the rules, but. Mm-hmm. Where everybody loves you and you lose all the time, but it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be a hero on a losing team. And he was living in a cool city. It's very, mm-hmm. Not home, but I will, until proven otherwise, I will lean towards the former explanation, which is, well, it's a good thing. I think from a hockey point of view, it's a good, even if only one of those 2 years he looks any good, that's still pretty good. It's a great deal for a capped out team to get a guy who can play. If he's going to play in your top 4, it's mm-hmm. a ridiculous deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly looked, you know, he wasn't a liability in the playoffs.
Not at all.
No. So you've seen him. We've seen him in that part of the season where the Leafs have struggles, and he was fine. I think it gives you a little bit of breathing room in terms of how you assemble your defense for next year. So yeah, and it's the hometown discount of all hometown discounts. Like, I don't know what he would have got on the open market for, but it probably would have been, for a year, he would have definitely got more than $800,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's talk of 2, maybe even 3.
Yeah. So you're right. He liked it, I guess. And
logically, that's correct. That is correct. And I like to view sports through a logical brain.
Yes.
But yeah.
But why did he like it, is what you're saying. I think that's your, it's a reasonable, I hadn't thought of that. I just thought, wow, he liked it and he's happy and. Isn't that nice? And did he grow up with wearing Leaf pajamas too and all that stuff?
Yeah, you did.
He did, right?
Yeah.
So it's not another fairy tale ending for the Leafs. They have a lot of those except for the actual fairy tale ending.
Yeah. And we'll get to the fact that they're going to be able to, at the end of this season, say they were the second best team in all of the National Hockey League.
It's coming, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is absolutely coming.
Yeah.
They were in game 6. They were just a terrible call away from beating a team that didn't lose another game on the way to its third consecutive Stanley Cup. Isn't that the story?
That is. And we'll talk about that probably after 6 o'clock. But we have to break so we can talk to our next guest, John Morosi of MLB Network. As the Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, and Stephen Brunt. And how about this for a mind bender for you, Stephen? Like, what is the Blue Jays record if you just swap out Vlad Jr. and you throw in Aaron Judge?
Can you do this?
No,
can you
make but
this work? Do you have a program for that? You're on your computer. I think I want to see how that works.
No, I'm sure you could.
It'd be better.
It would be a lot better. Aaron Judge is having the contract year of all contract years, slashing .325, .394, .715 for an OPS of 1113.
Shame his team can't beat the Orioles, though.
Yeah, he had two home runs yesterday. And Garrett Cole got sunk by some early runs that scored against. He had a weird line score.
He had
11 strikeouts and no walks. But, yeah, five earned runs and Yankees lose. But Aaron Judge has 17 homers to lead all of the major leagues of baseball. But all of a sudden, yeah, the Yankees have lost three consecutive. And they're no longer the juggernaut that we once thought. Aroldis Chapman is potentially spending some time on the injured list. And, you know what? They're going to have the negative regression, and the Blue Jays will have a bit of a positive regression. I'm not saying that they're not one of the better teams in all of baseball, but the best team without any bumps in the road, probably unlikely.
Probably be nice, though, if the Baltimore goes back to being terrible before the Jays start their 19 games with Baltimore this year. Because that's been the kind of what in the back pocket part of this season, hasn't it?
It's a great point. They've won two in a row. And yeah, they're still seven games under .500. But they got some guys who throw like 100 out of that bullpen. They just called up the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Yep.
Yeah, so maybe not a total pushover. Although, yeah, maybe they're trading away some guys before the deadline. Let's talk to our pal John Morosi of MLB Network. How's it going, John?
Gentlemen, good evening. And I do hope for the sake of Toronto that the Blue Jays will get those bats going at some point. I was looking at the numbers. They have scored the fewest runs any team in the major leagues this month.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in May for a long time, my friends. I was a little surprised to see that.
Yeah, it's May 24th today. That's, yeah, it's almost done here, John. That being said, it is May, though. Like, at what point in the season, you know, it's a dirty word to say it's early when it concerns baseball in this city, but it is early. Like, at what point is it no longer early? Is it like June 1st? When do we say, holy cow, there's some real takeaways now from this portion of the season?
Yeah, no, it's a very fair question. I think we're coming up on it. June, to me, no longer feels early in terms of actually making some assessments of your team. And the reality is, when you're at a spot, as we talked about, just how tough the offensive output has been this month, really it's been dreadful. The pitching has kept them in it, but the equation right now is not working. And I heard you reference the Orioles before we began our conversation. Look at how well the Orioles have played, and also, more importantly, the Red Sox, who are just two games behind now in the loss column. So there's a lot of season left in terms of the amount of time that a team like the Red Sox has to catch up with Toronto. I think that the time is somewhat short for the Blue Jays to get this offense figured out before you start to see maybe some more pronounced personnel changes with the roster or really having to look at what the needs are for the organization, because it's not working right now. You've basically got three guys who are performing at roughly a league average or better level, and it's right now not working. The equation is just not working offensively. You look at Vladdy's numbers. I thought Carlos Pena made some really good points this morning on the morning show about how Carlos was talking about how often he is top spinning the ball now, Vladdy. And I took a deeper look at the numbers, and the numbers really affirm that. You look at his four-seam batting average has dropped about 100 points, and the sinker batting average, to me, if you look at Baseball Savant, that's the key number for me right now with Vladdy, is if he's not able to get the bat around on time for the power sinkers. And then that to me is a new pitch we're seeing more of now. For a long time, it was the high four-seamer. Now you're seeing teams like the Yankees, and Tom Verducci's talked about this, the power sinkers down in the zone. It makes total intuitive sense. Carlos is saying that Vladdy is slow a little bit with the bat speed. He's not getting the bat around, so he's sort of topping the ball because he's trying to catch up with it with a higher launch angle, resulting in a top spin ball to the left side. And that ball low in the zone is the sinker. And if you're slow on the sinker, and if it's a power sinker, all you can manage is a weak ground ball to the left side. And if that's all Vladdy can do, this is a very probably even worse than pedestrian lineup. Again, it's been the best, it's been the worst lineup in baseball in the month of May. And as we've talked about, the calendar says, guys, May is almost over, and that's a pretty big sample size that we're looking at. This lineup is simply not getting it done.
Okay, but here's the problem. If it's Vladdy and Teoscar Hernandez who are killing you, one guy who was, you know, could have been the MVP last year, the other guy's Silver Slugger, established major league hitters, et cetera, et cetera. If roster construction is not going to fix that, because they're not going anywhere, obviously. And it's right. It's not Ramiel Tapia that's killing you. It's the fact that those two guys are, you know, nowhere close. And, you know, Springer's been okay, you know, good to okay to good. I say Bo Bichette's had moments, but, you know, JP, those guys, they're going to be hitting 3-4, 4-5, 2-3, no matter what. Like, you're going to live and die with them, aren't you?
You are. And so basically it is up to the coaching staff to find a way to get better performance out of the existing cast, because you're right. I mean, there's not really – and you can make a change around the margins with a Tapia or Zach Collins, but you are who you are, and unless you're going to make some dramatic trade deadline move, and I candidly don't see that happening. Do we see a promotion from the minor leagues? But even then, when you look at that, it's not fair to someone like an Orelvis Martinez or a Gabriel Moreno to say, okay, yeah, come in and save the season. It's not fair to them. The major league hitters with resumes, Bo Bichette's one of them, Matt Chapman's another, these guys have to produce. And when you look at the big picture here, to your point about Teoscar, you think about why is this story so different from last year, and you've lost Marcus Semien, and nominally his replacement, Matt Chapman, has not hit yet, really. And so you've effectively lost an MVP finalist and replaced him with someone who's not hitting yet. Vladdy is a very normal version of Vladdy. And Teoscar has been a non-factor since the injury. There you go. That's a third plus of your lineup, and Bo is not the same Bo. So there's the explanation. The question is, how long can you go with it? And I'm sure internally, Jay's front office is wrestling with this issue right now. I mean, you get out your manual of emergency. The first question is always, okay, you're going to change somebody on the coaching staff. Well, if you're not going to do that, you're basically – just hoping that there's an adjustment that whether it's a different approach or different conversations yields a better result. I mean, you have guys with track records. I think the one thing that we're seeing all around the game, and again, the issue that is sort of pervades all conversations with respect to offense in this sport right now is the baseball. Mm-hmm. Do we see the baseball behave differently in the summer months? Is it going to carry more? The Jays have been in the past a fly ball type of an offense. And those fly balls last year were carrying over the wall. Right now they're not. But it's the same rules for everybody, okay? Everybody is playing, and I'll choose my words carefully here and say it clearly. Everybody is playing with the same inconsistent baseball, okay? Oh. The baseballs themselves have been inconsistent game to game, at bat to at bat. That's what we're dealing with right now. So you can either lament this and say after every loss, well, the baseball is the reason, or you can be who you are, which is you're the best people in the world at this, the best coaches in the world, the best managers in the world, the best hitters in the world. There have to be other ways to get the job done. And Jays do not make adjustments. They will be what they have been for the last month, which is a below average, below 500 team, which is what they've been in May. And they'll miss the playoffs. They can either make an adjustment and maybe make the playoffs, or if they don't, they'll miss because Boston's going to catch them. Because Story has figured it out, mm-hmm. and you look at the overall depth of the Red Sox. Francie Cordero's come in. He's given them a jolt. They're going to catch him. If the Jays do not make adjustments, they will be caught by the Red Sox. And at that point in time, you start to really wonder about the direction of this team.
John, let's talk about the biggest story in Major League Baseball right now. I mentioned the Yankees, who have lost three straight, and they have not won since it was revealed post-game Saturday that Josh Donaldson referred to Tim Anderson, the White Sox shortstop, as Jackie, as in Jackie Robinson. He has subsequently been denounced. I mean, his actions were denounced by his own manager and his own teammates. He's been suspended by Major League Baseball for one game. He's appealing that suspension, so can continue to play until his appeal is heard. The White Sox aren't going quietly over this thing. Is this... is this over? Like, how much staying power does this story have?
Well, it's a fair question because obviously he has been, while he's been suspended, he did appeal it, which means that as long as the appeal is out there, it's going to be talked about, and it should be talked about. Josh made a mistake. He should not have said what he said. I think that it is clearly inappropriate what he said, and the suspension, which I understand the rationale for it from baseball's perspective, because a couple things. Number one, baseball could have denounced what Josh did without suspending him, but they suspended him, and the explanation for it, I think, passes muster for me, which is what Josh said was offensive, objectively offensive, and it also started a benches clearing issue in the middle of a game at Yankee Stadium in New York City. Mm-hmm. And so not only was the speech itself offensive, but it created a legitimate on-field incident. And so the group of the Major League Baseball Commissioner's Office that deals with this is the on-field discipline group, and Michael Hill, who runs that group, decided on the discipline of the one-game suspension to which Josh has appealed. It should be noted that he's currently on the COVID IL, so he's not playing at the moment
right. Until
he's able to clear protocols. I think when you look at the big picture, and again, Aaron Judge has said he should not have said it, and Aaron Boone did as well. Now, Aaron said he shouldn't have said it. He did not agree with the suspension, but Aaron Boone has also said he should not have said it. I think to take a step back, Josh's explanation of it was that it was meant in jest, or that it was an inside long-running joke that was meant to defuse the situation. Clearly, it did not defuse the situation. You just saw the reactions of the players. You saw the reaction of Tim Anderson. It was an offensive thing to say. And it clearly, especially when viewed in the context of what had happened between the Yankees and White Sox, where there were numerous tense moments in the last week, it was both the wrong thing to say and objectively the wrong time to say it. And it was the latter part that precipitated the on-field incident that led to the suspension. So it was, again, the wrong remark at the wrong time. And in many, many ways, it is something that has certainly brought about a lot of discussion around the game, but I think has really renewed a discussion, a very important one, about what is okay to say on the field and what is not. And that was not okay to say on the baseball field.
Well, I would also argue maybe said by the wrong guy, because, you know, he is a polarizing, I think I'm going to be diplomatic here. Josh Donaldson is a polarizing figure. You know, like the players who play against him hate him. And some of the players who played with him don't like him. He's a very, you know, he gets on people, and that's part of his, you know, he's a complex personality. As you probably know, John, he's a different cat, but the fact that I'm not surprised the Yankees haven't entirely rallied around him here, and the stuff Liam Hendricks said rang true. You know, I think if anybody's been around baseball, I thought the stuff that Liam Hendricks said, it rang 100% true. So it's not just what was said, it was who it came from. Like, you can't imagine Josh Donaldson having a yuck, yuck, in-joke relationship with another ball player on another team. That's not him.
Right. And again, I think, to your point, Stephen, you have to be responsible for the consequences of your actions and what you say. And again, the direct consequence of what Josh said was the bench is cleared. He was shouting with Grandal at home plate. And I think Josh has to understand that part of the reason why the reaction was the way that it was, again, probably the source of the remark, okay? Like, it was Donaldson saying it. They had some tensions before. You cannot, to your point, Stephen, you cannot assume that a remark will be taken lightly when it, A, has a racial nature to it, which this clearly did, and B, when you're not getting along with the person that you're saying it to at that given time. So the context and the way in which something is said, you can't assume the way it will be received, even if your intentions were benign, and I'm not saying that they were or were not benign in this case. Whatever your intent is, you have to understand the way that it's being received to the person that you're communicating it to. That is the essence of communication. And clearly, it was not the right thing nor the right time to say what Josh had said.
John, always appreciate the time. We'll talk again next week. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much, guys. We will see if the Jays' offense has righted itself in that week. A week is a long time in baseball.
It is.
Play seven games. Yep. They could win seven in a row, and we could be talking about a team that looks like the best in baseball again. That's why the 162-game march, my friends, is the best thing to follow in sports. Love it.
No doubt. See you, John.
All the best.
You too. John Morosi, MLB Network. Josh Donaldson.
Yeah.
Teammates with Liam Hendricks in 2015.
Yes.
So, like, Liam knows him.
Knows him well.
Yeah. They were teammates.
Yes.
On the same team.
Yes.
So they shared, they were together every day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Yep. And he was a great player who helped that team win.
the inside joke explanation is, like.
Look, I don't know how many players there are in baseball. They're all rolling their eyes at that one.
Well, it's hilarious even to go back and reference the I think it was an SI article that Josh was referencing, which, like, I don't know, post-fact, like, maybe he went back, and, like, I don't know. So the article is, Tim Anderson, yes, is I'm kind of like Jackie Robinson, but, like, not as in, like, I have to take it upon my, no, he's like, I'm the only black guy, like, in a sport predominantly filled with white guys.
Yes.
That's what the article was. And yes. That was the whole point of the line of questioning that led to Tim Anderson referring himself to Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, he wasn't being grandiose.
No.
At all. He was you know, the diminishing African-American content in baseball is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no, it was not about him comparing himself. So, and Josh Donaldson using it a way to needle the guy is, that's who Josh Donaldson is.
Well, and, yeah, just days removed after getting on a quad A catcher who has, like, single digit games in Major League Baseball.
That's the guy. And, you know, on the one side, you can say, that's the competitive guy. The fire's burning every at bat. He cares. And, you know, he's, all he wants to do is win and be great. And you want him on your side, which to a point is true. Mm-hmm. But I think if you know, guys like Liam Hendricks who've actually been in the same clubhouse, it wears thin. I'll tell you something. It really wears thin from talking to people when things are not going well.
Correct.
You don't want to be near them.
Well, and things are going exceptionally well in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least were up until three games ago.
Yeah. No, but that's the guy. So, yeah, can you be a great baseball player and a jerk? I'm looking for radio-friendly words here.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
You can be both.
Yeah. And listen, I'm sure the Yankees will be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I listen, if they're not, and if Josh Donaldson is pointed out to be a reason as to why they're not, he's not exactly American League MVP Josh Donaldson anymore.
No,
he's not making the big some
dog.
Money.
Like, he was the big dog here.
Yes.
He's not the big dog.
And he's like a little chihuahua over there.
Yeah, he is.
And I thought a couple of things were telling. Well, yeah, the Liam Hendricks being former teammates, his current teammate, Aaron Judge, not exactly throwing him under the bus, but not exactly saying, like, I know Josh and he would never, and this is outside of his character. It was like, nah, a guy shouldn't have said that. Like, why would he say it? And then his manager, same thing, did mm-hmm. not exactly stick up for Josh Donaldson. Listen, he's a great player.
He is.
In his brief time as a Blue Jay, probably one day going to be on the level of excellence, right?
Maybe.
Okay. We won't say that definitively. But yeah, and he won an MVP award here. But yeah, I'll just say humans contain multitudes.
They do.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, some people not generally surprised at Josh Donaldson not making friends. All right, when we come back, we'll talk to Ben Nicholson-Smith in St. Louis. But before that, we'll get to, yes, the Leafs perhaps being the second best team in the National Hockey League. It's the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be right back.